This is the Bad Hops Podcast, a baseball podcast where we discuss everything but the box score. So if you're looking for Darryl Strawberry's lifetime strikeout to walk ratio or how many unassisted putouts Coco Crisp ever made, this is not the place. But if hearing about Mike Trout and AJ Pollock makes you hungry, welcome. We're your hosts. I'm Jackie McCucci.
And I'm Mark Butler.
And today, we're firing up the hot stove. Welcome to Bad Hops. You hungry, Mark?
I'm starving now. I'm thinking of all those strawberries and those pescatarian delights that you were talking about there. Finish it all off with a little Coco Crisp.
Oh, yeah. Got to have some dessert. Not weird at all.
You eat Rice Krispie treats for a dessert? Why not? Why not put a little chocolate in there? I'm now sort of sad that there's no ball player named Fruity Pebbles.
Give it time.
We're hungry for information about baseball. And we're going to talk about some ill-advised choices of ball players that have started their own restaurants. This has been a delight to research because there's so many players that have ended up at least putting their name on a restaurant. And I don't know if any of them are good.
It's as common as them having dealerships and, you know, selling insurance. This seems to be right up there. Got to put your name on some type of restaurant. And it's always a, well, we'll get into that later, but it always seems to be, you know, a certain type of restaurant. But I think you're going to tell us about some exceptions, which I can't wait to hear about.
They're exceptions and not exceptional. Let's just, that's our teaser for later in the episode. We're going to do a little appetizer course first. I think we were going to talk about our favorite foods at the ballpark. And Jackie, I'm curious, where do you go first when you line up for some chow?
Okay, it depends on which ballpark I am at. And I will say I do spend a fair amount of time here in Seattle at what is now T-Mobile Park. And I usually go for what is not considered the most traditional of ballpark foods. I go for the sushi, or now we have a poke bowl restaurant over at T-Mobile. So I usually will go for that. And I know you like the Spam Musubi as well.
I need to correct you. I'm sorry. I hate to do this during the episode, but I do need to correct you. It's not Spam Musubi. It's the Spam Moose Subi.
Oh, that's right. My bad. Is it still called that?
I think they might have finally changed that. I think they finally started taking some of the players' names off of some of the sushi rolls. The Ichi roll, I think, is still there, but the Kano roll is no longer there. Much like Robinson Cano's contract is no longer on the books with the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, that turned real fast, didn't it?
Spoiled like day-old sushi.
There you go. I will say I do like a good hamburger. They definitely have had some good hamburger. I like when they use the local chefs and restaurants. So I will get a hamburger and fries. Hamburger? Did I say bugger? I don't know what I said there. Hamburger and fries.
Hamburger and fries. What about it? You got a problem with that?
Not even sure what that accent was, but yeah, hamburger, fries. I'll do the garlic fries. I'll do regular fries. And I do, you know, I like a good hot dog every now and then too, especially if they've got Nathan's. I don't know if they have Nathan's at the ballpark here, but when I'm back in New York, the stadiums there definitely have Nathan's. Make a good Nathan's hot dog.
Yeah, I think this is where you and I finally get to disagree on something because I am more of a sausage person. You like your hamburgers. I like my sausages. I tend to go for whatever the weird sounding sausage is. I have run into jalapeno cheddar dogs I think that was at a Twins game at Target Field.
All right.
I'm very partial to the bratwurst at Funco Field for our Fightin' Everett Aqua Sox, the single A team. And yeah, generally I will go for a good Polish, I'll go for a good brat, I'll go for a good Italian, because usually they put little good extra stuff on there, little caramelized onions or something like that. I like not like a fancy meal. I don't just settle for that hot dog, but I know you've kind of got hot dogs on the mind a little bit. Sorry, that came out wrong.
That's fine. I know that sounds oddly a little creepy, but yeah, because I knew we were going to be talking about food. And I knew we were going to talk a little bit about what our favorite baseball fare is before we get into baseball players and their restaurants. I was like, huh, how did hot dogs and baseball become so connected to each other? So I figured I would do a little research and find out. As would happen as you do research on the interwebs, there's not really an agreement as to how it came about. There are two stories. So there are two origin stories, and I was on MLB.com. They had one origin story.
Oh, well, that's going to be like a puffery piece. So I feel like you can rule that one out.
I agree. And then I was on another site called Ballpark Digest that had a different story. And then as I kind of went down the rabbit hole, it was like kind of a back and forth. And then I actually found a blog, probably a little blog. It's called the Food Girl in Town blog. And so she basically said, hey, there are two stories and you're going to come across both of them. So I'm like, well, okay, if it's good enough for the Food Girl in Town to go with the two origin stories, it's good enough for us at Bad Hops. The first origin story, surprise, surprise, has a German link, pun intended. Mm. The story goes that Chris Vondahai. I'm sure I messed up that.
I gave you no tricky names to pronounce today.
I gave them all to myself.
You walked yourself right into this one. Yeah, you hit yourself with your own pitch.
I did. I hit myself with my own pitch. We'll just say Chris, good old Chris Von, German immigrant. Grocer turned entrepreneur. He actually owned the stadium where the St. Louis Brown Stockings played. You know them as the St. Louis Cardinals, who
have the best fans in baseball.
In baseball, there you go. He is said to be the first to sell the Dachshund sausages in his bar.
God.
Yeah, yep, in 1893, and was also the first apparently to charge a lower price for tickets at the ballpark, so people would spend more money on beer, which, as we know, that strategy has long left the building because they're still charging, at least at MLB games, a lot of money and a lot of money for the food. According to this story, the sausages, because they were easy to sell, because they were easy to eat in the stands, right? Because it's just, you know, hot dogs plunked in a bun, very easy, not messy. Although now, like, you go to the ballpark, you can definitely have there's a lot of good food, but a lot of it is messy and difficult to eat in the stands. That was a total no-brainer.
Are you sure you don't want to just tell the story of the Earl of Sandwich and make it about hot dogs instead?
Exactly. I should just tell the story about the Earl of Sandwich instead of me trying to pronounce unpronounceable German names. But anyway, this story is not totally verifiable, but the other story involves Harry M. Stevens. And yes, I can pronounce that name. That's not going to trick me up. Thank God. He actually invented the hot dog. Stevens was a British-born Ohioan, and he is also said to be the first to sell the sausages in a bun, and he sold them at the Polo Grounds during New York Giants games, and that supposedly was in 1901, so a little bit later than 1893. And he called them Dachshund dogs, okay? And he started selling them because after he was unable to sell ice cream on a cold day in April. So he needed to have something else. Couldn't just have, I don't know, I guess the peanuts and whatever didn't work. He wanted something more hearty.
He'd also tried selling tea to China and coals to Newcastle.
Exactly, exactly. So there was a cartoonist who was covering the event. So he was making a cartoon, drawing a cartoon about this. Apparently he couldn't spell Dachshund. So he captioned his cartoon, hot dog, after hearing the vendor shout, "They're red hot. Get your Dachshund hot sausages while they're red hot." And that's how they became the hot dog, because he could not spell Dachshund, which is, you know, I get it. It's probably a hard word to spell.
I'm not even going to try.
So all because someone couldn't spell. So if we had had spell check back in 1901, we wouldn't have had the hot dog. So there you go, technology.
Wow. What a wonderful future we live in. Thank you for that. And that is a good amuse-bouche for today's episode. Get a little tasty treat in us. I'm still hungry because that was just a conversation about hot dogs. But
that's right.
That's all we've got right now. Neither of us are set up in a kitchen like some podcasters. We're tucked away in other locations. Speaking of locations, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back and I'm going to take you on an exotic journey. Thank you. We are talking ball player restaurants today, and I want to take you on a voyage to one of the most magical places on earth, Jackie, Cincinnati, Ohio.
Famous for weird chili.
That's right. Have you ever been to Cincinnati?
Just the airport.
I have still not actually been to Cincinnati. And someday, I guess I do have to go to all the ballparks at some point. So I guess it, for no other reason, the WKRP Museum, which doesn't exist, I don't think it exists. And of course, the Great American Ballpark, is that what they call it?
I think it is. I think it is. And, you know, my niece just moved to Ohio, so I am hoping to get there to visit her and do some ballpark visits in between, because otherwise I'd really have no reason to go to Ohio.
Maybe I can tempt you into getting some tasty treats while you're there. But I bet you're wondering, why did I choose Cincinnati? Cincinnati is the home of the three-way.
I'll just leave that alone. I'm assuming this has to do with food. We're a family podcast.
It does.
Okay.
Does it mean something else?
No, Mark. Go ahead. Tell me about Cincinnati.
Okay. Well, Cincinnati does not have a lot of famous foods associated with it, but the most famous is Skyline Chili. You mentioned the chili earlier, so I know you know about it. Skyline Chili is the home of the three-way chili, which is chili on top of pasta with a mountain of shredded cheddar on top. It sounds like a lot of Midwestern foods chunked on top of other Midwestern foods. And that's cool. Skyline Chili has now branched out. It started in Cincinnati, and sometimes you will hear it called Cincinnati Three-Way Chili. The Skyline had branches in Chicago, so I got to try it there. As much as I love spicy spaghetti sauce, I like that arrabbiata action. The three-way chili is not spicy spaghetti sauce. It's chili on top of pasta with some shredded cheddar instead of the Parmesan or the Reggiano.
I don't know. My ancestors are flipping around in their graves.
Well, nonetheless, it is the signature dish of Cincinnati. By the way, if you're keeping score, if your mind's still in the gutter here, a four-way adds onions.
I feel like just adding onions shouldn't, I don't know. You're just adding like a garnish.
Just to keep track. There's literally, that means there are now four ingredients.
Yeah, so we're just counting the ingredients. So if you put like a little oregano or something on top, that would be a five-way.
There is a five-way, but it's not what you think it is. A five-way adds beans. Honestly, to me, that sounds like the recipe for a one-way. So I jest because Cincinnati does not seem like a real foodie town, right? It's more like a town that likes food, and there's nothing wrong with that. I did a little basic research at first, and I looked up the 25 essential foods for any Cincinnati visitor. It was an assortment of all sorts of exotic foods like ribs, donuts, and ice cream.
No chili on top of any of these things, though.
Never say never, but no, not that I could find. Okay. It basically just sounded like good food that you could get in Milwaukee or Tampa or Houston, whereas I think all of those places would also add a little flair to what they're serving you. So apart from that Cincinnati three-way chili, the only local food that I could find was something I'd never heard of before called Glier's Goetta, which is described as a sausage oat meat mixture. It's served at breakfast. You could Google it, but I don't recommend Googling because it just looks weird. Looks kind of like a blood pudding or a black pudding from an Irish breakfast. Kind of lumpy and weird and I don't know.
Well, you're really selling it.
Yeah. I think that might be something you put on top of some bacon so you could have a kind of a double meat two-way. Let's start out in the 50s. The first restaurant that I found in Cincinnati was owned by former Cincinnati Red Ted Kluszewski. Big Clue. I'm going to keep saying Big Clue because I have a limit to how many times I can say Kluszewski without getting it wrong and then having to go back and re-record the whole episode. Not that we would ever do that.
No, we would never re-record an episode.
So Big Clue is a big guy that played first base for the Reds 1947 to 1957. So this restaurant opened in the 50s, but I think it ran through the 70s. I think being a Big Clue was a big deal in Cincinnati. It wasn't just a big deal. He was just big. This dude was like all gun show. He had huge biceps. Let me do a little tangent here, speaking of biceps, because this is kind of important. Did you know that the Reds had sleeveless jerseys in the 1950s?
I did, actually. I recall the photos. There were a number of weirdly sleeveless or close to sleeveless jerseys back then. Interesting.
Generally, you think of players from that era covered in head to toe. And if they were really lucky, that maybe they had short sleeves on a really hot day. But The Reds had sleeveless jerseys, and that was thanks to Ted Kluszewski, whose biceps were so huge that regular sleeves wouldn't fit his arms. And the whole team went along with it in solidarity. I think that is super impressive. And it's, I guess that they would call that adaptive technology today. But in 1950, it was sort of like, oh, it looks like that guy just cut his sleeves off.
Well, I mean, do you remember back in during the whole steroid era with Sosa and McGuire? I mean, they would do something to their sleeves too, so that they could, you know, kind of their biceps could fit in there, but they didn't cut their sleeves.
I think they would just flex hard and just kind of like bust a
seam or two. Yeah. But yeah, I do recall that they had something going on. Well, maybe a little elastic going on their sleeves, but yeah, that's interesting. I didn't realize that that's where the sleeveless jerseys came from.
So why are we talking about all this? Well, because Big Clue was a big boy with a big appetite. So that makes him a good candidate to open Ted Kluszewski's Charcoal Steakhouse.
Is that a selling point for steak? I mean, I eat steak, but I'm not like a huge, you know, steakhouse kind of person.
I tend to like smoke, and so I cannot vouch for the fact, but if they have charcoal in the name, I assume they had some sort of open grill.
Okay.
Sort of thing going on. And, you know, there's like Weber Grill had their own restaurants for a really long time, and they would wheel a grill out to the table and and cook at the table. And it was like, it sounded really stupid, except then all of a sudden you get food right off the grill and you're like, okay, thank you. This is the greatest thing I've ever eaten.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Must be a Midwest thing.
Very much so. Where real estate is cheaper and there's room to actually schlep grills through a dining room. The menu of Big Clue's Steakhouse, there's so much food. There's like every kind of meat. There's a category for chops. There's a category for fowl. There's a category for fish. It's like the 50s and 60s, and they're making a point out of getting stuff from all over the world.
Okay.
Colorado trout, Kennebec salmon, African lobster tails, and a ton of sides. The menu is amazing. I will fish out that menu and we'll post it so everyone else can live vicariously through Cincinnati diners from the 50s and 60s. I think if you're not hungry, you should not be going to Big Clue's restaurant, because they will serve you things like tomato juice and onion soup as a side, but they'd rather serve you hash browns and baked Idaho potato and garlic toast and, you know, well, cottage cheese. You can get cottage cheese too.
You know, you need a health food in there.
There's so much food, but most of it sounds really, really good, unlike a lot of these hokey, phony baseball restaurants or any sort of sports-themed restaurants, like the NASCAR Cafe might sell you some mozzarella sticks or whatnot. So that's the main reason I chose it, because I think I would actually eat there.
Okay.
I did enjoy spending a little time with the wine list there as well.
Oh, fancy.
I want to read you to the description under rosé.
Okay.
These wines go well with everything.
Oh, discerning.
It's very hard to argue with, right? I got tomato juice and cottage cheese. This wine does not go well with that.
I want a rosé that goes, a nice dry rosé for my cottage cheese.
My favorite on the wine list, though, was the category for champagne, which had both imported and American. And before anybody like writes in and complains, it's like, oh, champagne only comes to the Champagne region. I get it. This is Cincinnati. It's like 1950s. It's like, we're going to have champagne tonight.
That's right. No one was making that distinction. Oh, I want some sparkling wine, please.
Sort of wondering, based on this, if people actually knew what champagne was, because a lot of people didn't know what pizza was in the 1950s.
And get so, a little cold duck. Do they have cold duck?
I assume that would be in the American category.
Okay.
The category for champagne in the menu describes champagne as gay, bubbly, and delicious. Now, I would not have thought a big beefy dude cutting the sleeves off his jerseys was exactly going to go for gay, bubbly, and delicious, but you know, it's simpler times.
It was simpler times, and you know, it does sound delightful.
By the way, I think if we were to have gone there, I would have ordered the side of hot slaw, which I have no idea what that entails. And I looked up recipes online and I could not find an answer as to what hot slaw might be. But that does seem like the most terrifying thing on the menu.
It does, especially if there's mayo in it, because I don't, as much as I do love me my mayo. We do have a friend who despises mayonnaise. So maybe if we should bring him some hot slaw.
It also has vegetables in it, so I think he might be afraid of it for any number of reasons.
Could kill him.
I don't think slaw has to have mayonnaise in it.
Well, probably not. You could do a vinegar base.
Although I say that, and I'm from the Midwest, and it's like, of course you put mayonnaise. You probably put Miracle Whip and mayonnaise in your slaw.
That's a two-way.
And that is the dirtiest thing you've ever said.
Oh, trust me, it is not. But anyway.
That's Big Clue, Ted Klushevsky, the guy with infinite tickets to the gun show in his charcoal steakhouse in Cincinnati. Let's move a little bit forward in time, because the thing that actually started all this when we first started talking about athletes that had restaurants is that I remembered that Johnny Bench had a restaurant. You know Johnny Bench, right? You might know him because you actually gave me these beautiful tumblers from the restaurant that we're going to be talking about, Johnny Bench's Home Plate. In case you don't know who Johnny Bench is, Johnny Bench is the guy from a town called Binger, Oklahoma, which looks like it should be pronounced Binger, Oklahoma, which is where Netflix was invented.
Is it really?
No, you never heard of binge watching?
Oh, binge. Oh, I get it. You were making a joke.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you for letting everybody know that I was making a joke, because now everybody's going to be, oh, yeah, that was good. That was where Netflix was invented. Johnny Bench was also the spokesman for Krylon paint. So that meant in the 70s in New York City, he would have been the hero of every B-boy jacking spray paint on subway trains.
I wanted to know the name of the hand cream that Johnny Bench now hawks. So that's why I kind of dipped out for a second there. So I apologize because he apparently has giant hands and he now, like, there's some hand cream I keep seeing. It's a very like low rent kind of commercial that he's involved in, and it's Blue Emu. That's what it is.
Okay. Is this do you get ads for this when you're watching Andy Griffith reruns on MeTV? Because that sounds like the target demo.
No, if you're watching baseball, especially because I watch it on a streaming service. So you get some really weird ads. And obviously baseball, as much as it's trying, their demographic is still old men. So between the erectile dysfunction ads and like stuff like Blue Emu, you get some really interesting ads. Or
Johnny Bench was also the guy from the Cincinnati-based episode of The Partridge Family, where they played at Kings Island Amusement Park.
I don't remember that episode, but now I have to find it.
Yes, the episode was called I Left My Heart in Cincinnati. And guess, you'll never guess who Johnny Bench played in that episode.
Did he play himself?
He didn't. This is amazing. No. I was actually shocked. He played
Awesome.
He played the pool waiter at the swimming pool.
The pool waiter. Okay.
Yeah.
So they were in Cincinnati. Okay. They were in Cincinnati at a hotel with a pool, and Johnny Bench was the waiter. Okay.
Yes. I suppose there was like a little bit of a double take sort of thing. I couldn't actually find a full episode to watch, but I just love, because usually it's like, Johnny Bench, what are you doing in Springfield? It's exactly. Like, well, Homer, let me tell you. So yeah, props to Johnny Bench. Anyway, what were we talking about today?
Oh, I think we're talking about restaurants. I want to hear about Johnny Bench's restaurant.
Probably I do need to say that Johnny Bench was the greatest catcher of all time for the Cincinnati Reds, and probably a top five all-time catcher. I mean,
he
great offense, great defense, a good game caller, and an icon of the big red machine in the 70s. So a guy that could do no wrong. What does a guy that could do no wrong do in the 1970s? Now you open a restaurant. Johnny Bench's Home Plate. The Big Red Machine won the World Series in the 70s. But did you know that Johnny Bench's Home Plate is a pennant-winning restaurant?
a pennant winning, but not a World Series winning restaurant.
That is correct. Yes. I think they might be selling themselves short here. But, you know, I say that I've never made it to the restaurant playoffs. So what do I know?
It's true.
Home Plate was a theme restaurant, and that is definitely theme with a capital T. And they were fully committed to their theme of sports. If it was more than just a baseball-themed restaurant, I guess that's savvy marketing, but who the hell is going to Johnny Bench's restaurant and being interested in basketball stuff from, like, the Cincinnati ABA team?
I mean, I have no idea, but maybe?
I assume his investors were probably just looking for backup when it's not baseball season to have a reason for people to go into the restaurant. Can we get people excited about the Cincinnati Bengals or the Stingers, the old hockey team? I wish I could have gone there because it sounds like all that. The dugout bar was dug out. It was a sunken bar filled with batting helmets and warm-up gear.
And was there like chaw on the floor and sunflower seeds? Because that's, I think, what's really at the bottom of the dugout.
I think by midnight, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that seems fair to assume. The thing that would have sucked me in, though, and made me ask to go back multiple times, is that there was a giant chair shaped like a catcher's mitt.
Oh, fun. And very 70s, too, because didn't they have like weird shape? I remember there being like weirdly shaped chairs, like a hand and that kind of thing.
Yes. And the stereo egg chair as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. They were all about the weirdly shaped themed chairs. That's cool, though.
One of my prized possessions in Animal Crossing is I did get a giant catcher's mitt chair, which just sort of showed up out of nowhere. And I'm like, well, I'm keeping this. If I had seen that in Cincinnati, I would have sat in it and then I would have made my sister get the Instamatic out and use up all 12 exposures on the film roll.
That's right. You get the little flash bulb the flash cube.
That you would burn your hand on taking off later.
Yep.
So they have, as we mentioned, they have these fancy custom tumblers, but even more fancy than that, two kinds of swizzle sticks. Now, if you went to a place in the 70s and they had custom swizzle sticks, you knew that you had made it.
You know, they should bring back the swizzle stick. I mean, is it just because it's, you know, it's too much plastic? We're using paper straws, so
We go to these places with fancy drinks and artisanal bartenders and things like that, and they insist on stirring it for you. I think in the 70s, it was sort of like, here's some orange juice and here's some vodka, stir it yourself.
Here's your mitt-shaped swizzle stick, and good luck to you.
Yes, I'm getting paid 75 cents an hour. Stir it.
Pretty much.
The bummer for me on Home Plate, even though you found the glasses, which I feel like I'm drinking out of every episode in Johnny Bench's, not memory. He's still alive.
He's still alive selling the blue emu hand cream. So there you go.
But all I could find in terms of the full menu was a flash photograph of a laminated menu online on an auction site. And I'm too cheap to actually buy the menu to get it.
There were a lot of menus that they put on eBay and those sites. People buy menus. People collect everything, but I hadn't realized what a big market that was.
Oh yeah. It's if it's sports memorabilia related. Oh my God. It is. Yeah. This is, I can't remember what this went for, but I think it was like over $300. It's like for a laminated menu.
Wow.
I have enough junk that I collect on my own for regular price. I'm not going to spend like $300 to get an old menu.
So what I want to know is, this is such a fancy, fancy restaurant. Do they have a shrimp cocktail? Because I do love me a good shrimp cocktail. When I was a kid, I think it was all about the cocktail sauce. When I was a kid, like if we went to a nice restaurant, I would always get a shrimp cocktail.
Oh my God. Right. And like cocktail sauce.
Yeah. Cocktail sauce. That was like, the whole point.
You guys, guess what? On summer vacation, we went to this place and I drank cocktail sauce.
That's right. Cocktail sauce with a side of Shirley Temple and a couple of shrimp. But yeah, it was all about the cocktail sauce. It was like fancy ketchup, basically.
Ketchup and horseradish. That is literally all it is. But oh my God, it's so good. I hate ketchup. Good. And I was afraid of horseradish as a kid, but I was like, I want to put cocktail sauce on my burgers.
So good.
I'm happy to report, yes, they do have shrimp cocktails. They also had jumbo shrimp. So it was kind of very crustacean in there. they had some other very fancy sounding stuff that I don't think would have necessarily played in a sports themed restaurant. Mm-hmm. Chicken Eugenie. You ever heard of Chicken Eugenie?
No. What is that?
Well, it's basically chicken, ham, and cheese.
So it's like a cordon bleu?
Kind of a cordon bleu, which I remember cordon bleu from the 70s. That felt like a very 70s dish. So yeah. I don't know if Eugenie is any different. I suppose it might be the type of cheese or what have you. The one that really killed me that was on the menu. So you've tripped yourself up by telling a story about a guy with a German name already.
That's right, that I could not pronounce, so apologies.
The thing that was listed on the menu at Johnny Bench's home plate that just blew me away, snails bourguignon.
Snails bourguignon? Not like it, but okay. So what does that entail? Like, because usually escargot is just like, basically it's, you know, butter and garlic.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty much what it is. Maybe okay. In like a wine sauce.
Very fancy
and very complicated, right?
Yeah.
And this is Cincinnati, Ohio in the 1970s, a town that's excited because they have donuts and ribs today. And Glier's Goetta.
Nicely done.
Escargot. And I remember like first running into escargot when I was out to dinner with my parents in the 70s and thinking, whoa, what is... It's like, can you tell me what this is? Because I don't know. I think it's called escargot, but what is it? And then my dad would say, what's snails? Like, oh, no. You call it escargot, and then it's like, I'm happy to pay $15 for this thing.
Yeah, it's all marketing is very important.
So what Johnny Bench did was to just straight up call it snails. And then add a fancy...
He's a regular guy.
And then add a fancy modifier to the end. So instead of just calling it escargot, it's like it's snails bourguignon. Mm. I would have to imagine that 99% of the people that went into that restaurant were like, what the hell is this?
But you're right, though. In the 70s, for whatever reason, because I remember trying them as a kid and, you know, knowing that they were snails, but like they were just like laden with butter and garlic. So... I mean, not that I wanted a whole plate of them, but they actually weren't bad. But there was a moment for these types of foods, from cocktail and escargot and tomato juice. Yeah, it was fine dining, apparently.
Yeah, classy stuff. May I tempt you with some dessert after your shrimp cocktail and your chicken Eugenie and your snails?
Why, yes, I still have some room for dessert. What do you got for me?
They had a line of ice cream cocktails, and I've not had an ice cream cocktail for a really long time, but booze and ice cream is good.
Oh, booze and ice cream. Okay, what you got? Is there some creme de menthe?
There is a creme de menthe parfait.
There has to be. It's the 70s.
It is the 70s. I did not see anything with the Galliano, which was the other like 70s. Because you make a Harvey Wallbanger with the Galliano, sweet treacly liqueur. But they did have apricot brandy ice cream cocktails. Mm. I would probably go for one of those too. So I'm going to get sloshed on ice cream. So far, so good. Yep, the snails is like a little iffy, but escargot is good. I love escargot. I'm not sure if I like snails or not. But the thing that really bugged me about Johnny Bench's home plate is some of the ads that I found. The first one I found that said that it's an ad with an umpire looking sort of smug, like leaning into the camera and kind of making a smug ump face. And the headline says, "You never know who you'll meet at the plate. Johnny Bench's home plate." And then there's a smaller picture in the background of Johnny Bench in his uniform and catcher's gear, looking away.
Like not looking at the camera?
Right. Yeah, because it was two separate photographs and, composited. But that really sucked to me because it essentially insinuates that Johnny Bench is going to be there. Well, you never know who you're going to meet at the plate. And it's like, how many people go there and they're like, well, hey, is Johnny here tonight? It's like, oh, no, you know, the Reds are playing in Los Angeles tonight. It's like, but
not going to be there.
The ad said, you never know who you'll meet at the plate. It's like, well, I'm here.
I mean, maybe some random umpire. I feel like using an umpire to advertise your restaurant is not really the best marketing. And I'm saying that as someone whose day job is in marketing. Just going to put it out there.
And you had gone to Angel Hernandez's restaurant.
I mean, that was after I went to Joe West's restaurant.
You got food poisoning and then you got thrown out.
Exactly.
The other ad that I found besides that disingenuous umpire one was just simply a text ad that said, try one of my restaurants after the game.
All right. Well, sure. It's like, hey, if you want, if it's not too much trouble after the game, if you're free, but only if you're free, you can come by my restaurant and try it. Maybe.
Yeah. If it's okay.
You know, as long as it's okay with you. But otherwise, you know, that's fine. Don't feel the need. Again, great marketing going on.
This is a tough one. Based on what you've heard so far, what would you choose between the two that you've heard so far? Because I know you're not going to pick anything from the final one. Let's go out to dinner, Jackie. You said you were hungry. Where do you want to go?
Oh, out of the restaurants that we've gone through? I would definitely, you know what? I would go to Johnny Bench's restaurant. It sounds classy. And I want to sit in the dugout bar. So yeah, I think it sounds interesting. I would totally check it out.
Why don't we do this? Why don't we start at Big Clues?
Okay.
Because I think the food looks better there. But then we can have a nightcap, get a little ice cream cocktail and sit in the dugout and sit in the Big Mitt.
Okay.
And then we could drink a few more of those ice cream cocktails and then we could try to do like headstands on the Big Mitt or something.
Okay. Yeah. And then just, you know, just vomit all over the Big Mitt after my creme de menthe cocktail, ice cream cocktail.
Green.
That's not going to be pretty. Not going to be pretty at all.
Speaking of not pretty at all, we are going to take a quick break to take us to the middle innings and then we'll bring back some less appetizing choices.
We're back. And Mark, where are we going next? I mean, I'm enjoying our food tour.
We're going to stay in Cincinnati because we're budget-minded people. We were already having to get time machines to get us there. So I don't want to have to get a rental car. So we'll just take something called a taxi cab.
A taxi cab.
From one of these locations to the other. Let's do a little three strikes, you're out thing here because this will be our third choice tonight. Let's talk about Pete Rose. You know Pete, of course.
Of course.
Pete Rose, the professional autograph signer, the dude that made up to $1 million a year signing autographs. He made some money playing baseball, I think. But do you happen to recall his other major source of income over his life?
I'll
give you a hint.
I don't remember.
I'll change the question to allegedly made some money.
Okay, allegedly made some money. I mean, he's been involved in so many things, so many things. I'm guessing we're not going with the gambling because I feel like he probably didn't make enough money with the gambling, which is why he's selling his autograph in Vegas.
I think it's been 30 years since the scandal broke, and I don't think it ever dawned on me that maybe he didn't actually make any money gambling.
I mean, that's the thing, right? So I mean, if you're a gambler, and if that's your, I mean, and it's an addiction, so, you know, we should be mindful of that. But chances are, even if you get a big windfall, you're probably going to blow it because you just keep gambling. And I'm guessing just from what he's done later on in his career that he still needs some money.
Well, you know, he was always a scrappy player. So maybe that's just his lifestyle that he's scrappy at everything. I think it's slightly more than allegedly because Pete Rose was declared permanently ineligible for baseball activities because of gambling, for betting on games that he was an active participant in either as a player or a manager. I don't know if he won or lost. Now I'm going to be thinking about that. Pete has made some questionable choices in his career. He was an amazing hitter. He is still Major League Baseball's all-time base hit leader. My pal Ichiro does have more hits overall if you include American baseball and Japanese baseball, but Pete Rose doesn't count that, which makes me want to count it.
Of course, Ichiro is going into the Hall of Fame.
Yes, and I think will probably have a lifetime pass to do whatever he wants in Major League Baseball, whereas Pete Rose has to sort of flit around on the periphery and get special exemptions if he wants to appear in the Cincinnati Reds Century Team or on-field ceremony or something like that. Pete has made some questionable choices in his life, and we won't speculate too much on those, but what we will speculate on are the questionable choices that he made in the restaurant business. So let's go back to Cincinnati, all the way back to Cincinnati in the mid-70s, across from the Western Bowl. Now, I have no idea where that is. I think it's a bowling alley. But it's
not like the Hollywood Bowl. No.
Hey, you want to go see that symphony tonight? Yeah. Every print ad that I could find for Pete Rose's restaurant in Cincinnati said it was across from the Western Bowl. It was just a bowling alley that everybody knew where it was.
Seems plausible.
It was pretty clear just from these ads that Pete Rose's restaurant was not Johnny Bench's restaurant. Johnny went for the immersive, hey, sports fans, check this out. We've got a catcher's mitt chair and a scoreboard in the bar. For Pete Rose, you could go there on Thanksgiving and you could order a chicken noodle soup appetizer or turtle soup, or I know your favorite appetizer, juice.
Juice. Was it just generic juice, or you have to have tomato juice. It's the 70s, right?
I think it might have just been orange juice.
Oh.
Which is
juice,
just sort of...
Yeah, can I just say, juice is not an appetizer. And I remember the whole tomato juice thing, but let's be honest. Juice is not an appetizer. It's a beverage.
It's something you drink. I guess gazpacho is the only thing that I would be a little iffy on. And because gazpacho is essentially tomato... cucumber juice, but it's a soup and you should eat it with a spoon.
Yeah.
Don't be eating your orange juice with a spoon or we will ban you from listening to this podcast. And don't be posting pictures of doing that because that's just wrong. I don't think I've ever been to a restaurant that's offered me juice as an appetizer.
And I don't plan on it either.
The one menu that I could find for the Cincinnati restaurant was the Thanksgiving menu. So I know that was a special occasion. You could get turkey or ham or a round of beef or Gulf shrimp and get all of these in child's portion sizes, which is good to know, except for the stuffed pork chop. If it sounds like I'm bringing minutia up, It's because Pete Rose did too. They made a huge deal in the ad that your kid could not ask for a child's portion of the stuffed pork chop. I love a restaurant ad that has rules like that take up like 30% of the ad copy.
And is it because it was such a giant size stuffed pork chop? They couldn't make a tiny one for a child. They didn't have small stuffed pork chops.
They didn't have knives. Like
I mean, you don't want to cut it in half, Mark, because you know that's just going to ruin it. But wow.
It would unstuff that pork chop.
I mean, and you know, kids love a good stuffed pork chop too. So what a disappointment that must have been.
I know that Pete Rose didn't write any of this ad copy, right? Because he doesn't strike me as a writer. But I hear that sort of like kind of scruffy little voice. I can just sort of hear him say, just make sure they know. Okay. This is like, I don't want kids coming in here and asking for a child-sized portion. That's just that the chef. He can't handle it.
Can't do it. Just can't do it. It's just can't be done. It's just not done.
If you're a kid, you order the full-size stuffed pork chop. If that's really what you want, I don't think any kid really does want that. So if you can't eat all of it, you know what? You get one of those cool waxy doggy bags.
Ooh.
I miss those. I think there was no greater reward leaving a restaurant than having the waxy doggy bag that had a sad-looking dog on it that said, you remembered.
I love that, too. And I, as a kid, I was like, are we going to give it to the dog? Because we always had a dog. And I was very much about making sure the dog got your leftover stuffed pork chop.
Jacqueline McCucci, that's enough out of you. You just put that in the refrigerator and go to bed.
Pretty much. But I took it very literally that we were going to give the dog the leftovers, right? I mean, we're certainly not going to eat this. I mean, why would we? It's a doggy bag.
You know how much that full portion of a stuffed pork chop cost? You didn't eat half of it.
I can guarantee you, as a child, I would never have ordered the stuffed pork chop.
Just as a reminder, we're doing three strikes here. Okay. So Cincinnati, mid-70s, across from the Western Bowl, strike one. Let's fast forward a little bit. Pete Rose is now out of baseball, not his own choice, but he's now permanently ineligible, barred from the Hall of Fame as of 1989, jailed for tax evasion. It's now 1992. What are you going to do, Pete Rose? Well, I'm going to open up Pete Rose's Ballpark Cafe in Boca Raton. So we are leaving Cincinnati. It's the winter of our discontent. We're
going
leaving.
To Boca.
Yeah, going to Boca. Here is what they've got at the ballpark. not what they have at the Ballpark Cafe, what they had at the Ballpark Cafe.
Ooh, that's sense.
Yeah, that's foreshadowing. Bases loaded hot chips.
Hot chips. Not nachos, but hot chips.
Yes, they're spicy, thick potato slices topped with melted Colby Jack cheese, bacon, green onions, sour cream, and cheddar cheese dipping sauce.
Wow, that's a heart attack on a plate.
Yeah, if that's not enough, let me tempt you with Pete's pork ossobuco.
Ooh, that's fancy.
Yes, that comes with pan gravy. If you suddenly become conscious of your waistline, thinking about all of the hot chips and the pork ossobuco, there is a low-carb turtle cheesecake.
A low-carb turtle cheesecake. Yeah. Because that really does sound dietetic. When I think dietetic, I think cheesecake.
According to the menu, and this is a direct quote from the menu, you might want to try that with a scoop of ice cream.
And continuing to make it low carb, but high, yeah. I'm sure, in yeah. sugar.
But like, you might want to try that. Just sell the freaking ice cream. Yeah.
That's I want to come to my restaurant. You might want to try the turtle cheesecake with some ice cream, or you might not. It's okay. Yeah.
I think you and I both subscribe to the passive aggressive school of thought, but there's sort of a weird passive going on with Pete Rose and Johnny Bench here.
It sounds like it.
Nonetheless, Boca Raton 1992, strike two. Now, quite a bit of time passes. While we fast forward the tape here, I want to take you on a quick sidebar. Did you know that Pete Rose's daughter, Kara, appeared on the first season of Passions, the greatest soap opera of all time?
It is the greatest soap opera of all time. I did not know that she was on Passions, but that's how she got her big break, right? Because she's really famous now.
Absolutely. I lost interest very quickly in this tangent, though, because the first thing I double-checked was, did Kara Rose play Timmy, the living doll boy?
Oh, no, that actor died.
Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. Thanks for putting a damper on my funny story.
Sorry, he died quite a while ago. I mean, if you had really done a deep dive or actually done any research, you would have found out.
Well, that's on my other podcast, which is called Passionate for Passions.
I am sure that there is a Passions podcast out there. I would be shocked if there wasn't at least one.
You mean another one?
Exactly.
Which is just me talking in my sleep. Let us jump ahead to the year 2015. Pete's been out of jail for tax evasion for a long time. He's still out of the Hall of Fame and maybe forever. He's now gotten the gig appearing on Fox Sports' post-game. I think it's only post-season coverage.
Yeah, I remember him being on the air, and he actually wasn't bad.
Yeah. I mean, he was a great baseball player. And I think if he literally could just sort of check himself,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a good manager too. And I think his greatest sins were he bet while he was managing and had way more influence over the teams.
Although there are some other nasty little allegations going on now that are not of the sports nature, but we don't have to dive into that.
Feel free to tell me what he allegedly did this time.
I think he was involved in some type of sexual harassment scandal.
That he dismissed by saying that was a long time ago, honey.
Exactly. Something like that. But yes, that just came up fairly recently. And I can't say as I'm surprised. So yeah, there's been more than just the gambling. And actually, okay. It's worse. He had a sexual relationship with an underage girl in the 70s.
Oh, God.
Yes. And yeah, accusations. Yep. Yeah. So no, not the gambling is not the worst thing that he did.
And denying a kid a child-sized portion of a stuffed pork chop was not the worst crime that he visited on a minor.
No, he did not. So I did not. I knew I saw the headline. I did not read it, but I was like, oh, I can't say as I'm surprised, sadly.
Welcome to TMZ Baseball.
Exactly.
We're your hosts, Mark and Jackie.
That's right. TMZ does have a sports segment, so there you go.
What's going on with Freddie Freeman? Tell me more about that.
Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean 2015. Let's go back to Pete Rose's restaurant where you bring your underage date. Sorry, no, don't do that. Don't do that at all. That's horrible.
All right, I'm going to take a couple cleansing breaths here, okay. And then I'm going to tell you that in 2015, so Pete has kind of rehabilitated himself a little bit, although now that seems more and more iffy as the longer we talk. You know what? Let's open a new restaurant. Why not? Pete Rose's Sports Bar and Grill.
Wow,
you inspired?
Really bringing it with the names.
I have the perfect place for this restaurant. The allegedly perfect place for this alleged restaurant. Mm-hmm. Las Vegas.
Well, of course, because that's where he is, right? Isn't that where he lives now? Or at least it seems like he lives there.
I feel like he was exiled to Las Vegas. Vegas, it might be the only place that has truly embraced him. And they might also just see him as a good customer. You will be shocked to learn that things didn't work out very well for the Pete Rose Sports Bar and Grill at the Hawaiian Marketplace on the Las Vegas Strip.
Oh, so like prime spot for him.
Yeah. Even though I love my Vegas and I have made annual trips for a really long time, I have no idea where the Hawaiian Marketplace is or was.
Now you have to find it. Oh, probably, yeah. You're right. It probably doesn't exist, especially since it was Vegas.
I am going to guess that by 2015, the biggest problem this restaurant had is that nobody cared about Pete Rose. It was not in Cincinnati or Montreal or Philadelphia, places where he played to great acclaim. It might also be the fact that the menu included things like Mexican or Greek shaved corn, which sounds like something the podiatrist would do to you.
Ew. Well, I mean, Mexican corn, but I didn't know there was Greek corn.
Right. So I think it's just like, well, do you want cotija on it or do you want feta? Probably good, but I don't think anyone says, let's go out and get shaved corn at a sports bar.
No. And I just think putting feta cheese on it is ridiculous. Just have Mexican corn.
You could also get breakfast flatbread because there's nothing that I like better than going to a sports bar for breakfast and having flatbread for breakfast. Although maybe you could put some of that goetta on top of it, wheat mixture. And then there was something that really just made me sad, something called Pete's Chicken, which made me think of Pete's Dragon. It's like, I don't want to eat that.
Pete's Chicken. It's like his pet chicken, right? Like, it's like, oh, didn't want to keep her anymore. Sorry, didn't want to keep her anymore. We just decided to take her out in the back and twist her little neck, and that's that.
Welcome to Bad Hops, the saddest podcast.
This is like a sad, right?
Next week, we'll talk about Bambi.
But really, like, Pete's Chicken, it sounds like somebody's pet. Like, you shouldn't, you shouldn't call it that.
Yeah. You're umping this game. Do you remember what the ball and strike count is for Pete Rose so far on restaurants?
I think we're on, this is his third restaurant, so we're on strike three, aren't we?
He hasn't struck out yet. In the next 15 seconds, you'll have closure on this. Okay. Remember, this restaurant opened in 2015.
Okay.
Let me quote from a press release from 2016.
Oh, dear.
Baseball icon Pete Rose is no longer involved with the former Pete Rose Sports Bar and Grill at the Hawaiian Marketplace. As evidence of his parting way with the venue, Rose's name has been unceremoniously blacked out on the restaurant signage. And so now it just reads Sports Bar and Grill.
You could just slap anybody's name up there, but just keep it as Sports Bar and Grill. It's like going to the Marriott. Where are you going to have a drink in the lobby? We're going to the Sports Bar and Grill for a drink.
Do you like sports? Do you like bars? What about grills?
There you go.
So if you're keeping score at home, that's three strikes. Pete is out. I think he's out of the restaurant industry completely, but he is still signing autographs and still spouting off on Fox Sports. So that's the last food thing we've heard from Pete Rose. So that was our whirlwind tour of the Cincinnati eater heat map.
I feel like, you know, we were doing well until we got to Pete Rose. It was actually kind of fun. And then I don't know, Pete Rose, and I'm going to, no pun intended, totally leaving a bad taste in my mouth with those three entries into the restaurant industry.
Take a quick break, and we will come back and talk a little bit more about restaurants we'd like to see and maybe some restaurants that we don't want to see.
Mark, as always, you give us a good blast from the past, taking us through Cincinnati's storied baseball player restaurant scene. But let's come back to modern times. Who would you like to see now? What current baseball player would you like to see open up a restaurant?
I'm going to go slightly back in time, but he hasn't been out of baseball for that long. I think it's only been 3 or 4 years since our pal Kendry Smiralis retired from baseball. He was a heck of a hitter, mostly DH for teams. He played for the Angels. He actually broke his ankle on a home run bounce. He walked off a game against the Mariners around and he was like sort of like hopping up and down and he put too much weight on his ankle and then he missed the rest of the season.
Yep. Don't celebrate too hard, kids.
Right. Ironically, so he walked off a game against the Mariners. He later joined the M's, I think 2 or 3 years later. But the most enduring memory I have of Kendry Smiralis in Seattle was that during a day game, he roasted a pig at the stadium out in the parking lot. He had one of those Cajachina big box grills that's kind of like, I think in the Philippines, they actually just take old mattress springs and stuff them full of hot coals, and then you can like splay out a pig on top of it. It takes a while, but man, it's so good. They had a camera out in the parking lot on the pig roast, and Kendrys was DHing. And so, of course, he didn't have a ton of stuff to do during that game. And so he would run out to the parking lot after his at-bats and make sure that the fire was hot enough, make sure that the, you know, everything was cooking, checking the temperature of the meat. And I just love the fact that he was roasting a pig. And that was by far the most interesting part of that game. It's like, I wonder how that pig turned out.
If only we could have had some.
Oh, man, I could go for some right now. Sounds really good. I would love to see him open like just kind of a big old like barbecue joint, kind of do that old roast pig action. And I would love to see him open a restaurant because I know the food would be good. Somebody that spends that much time cooking meat is usually doing it the right way.
Okay.
What about you? Where do you want to eat at?
I'm going to bring up someone who actually does have sort of a restaurant. He's a former player, our boy Hunter Pence, who famous of the San Francisco Giants. He actually has a coffee shop. So he's very big into coffee. He sells coffees. I think the next step for him, and he really does know his coffee. So like he got into it. And Hunter Pence seems, you know, him and his wife, they seem like they have a nice life and a nice rapport, and they run this coffee cafe together. And I don't think it's in San Francisco. Did he play in Houston for a while?
I think maybe that's where he ended his
career, because I think it might be there. I want to see him go to the next level. I want to see him open a restaurant because I feel like Hunter Pence is a thoughtful guy. He's very personal. He was also kind of a bigger personality in baseball. I'd like to see him open some type of restaurant. I feel like he'd be thoughtful with wines. I feel like he would know how to pair his foods. I feel like he would pick a real chef. It's not going to be just a steakhouse, or, you know, it's not just going to be burgers and steaks. So he's going to come up with some interesting things. Maybe he could open it up in San Francisco, because San Francisco is a great foodie town. And, you know, he did some big highlights of his career there. So that's the one I want to see, because I think Hunter Pence, and I would want to run into Hunter Pence at his restaurant. I'd be very disappointed if he wasn't hanging out there. I know he wouldn't, but I feel like if Hunter Pence opened a restaurant, it wouldn't be him just slapping his name on it and saying like, yeah, this is, given what he's done with the coffee, I don't think he's going to be like, yeah, just put my name on it and I'll just sign up on the menu. I think he would really get involved. So I think that would be fun.
I wonder, why are we choosing people that seem to be nice guys that are putting a lot of thought into their work? Wonder why is that?
I don't know. I can't imagine when it comes to food.
Well, I guess on the flip side of that, then, are there any ball players that you would prefer that they do not open a restaurant?
All right, I'm going to go for the easy joke here with Fernando Tatis Jr. I mean, he allegedly had ringworm from a haircut. I mean, this is like some type of sanitary issue.
Oh, so if he wore a hairnet, would that be okay?
Maybe he'd have to wear a hairnet. Maybe he'd have to wear a hairnet. So the stories when these guys get caught. But
I guess do not accept juice as an appetizer.
Do not accept juice as an appetizer at Tatis Jr.'s restaurant. We found out, right, that he got stripped of his bobblehead day at Petco Park, right? Yeah, it's going to be Juan Soto. You're going to get a Juan Soto jersey, a word that Mark had never heard of. He texts me and he's like, oh, here's a word. I'm like, where have you been the past decade? Where have you been, Mark? I guess you've never owned a jersey either.
If I was Max Scherzer, I feel like I would be really bugged right now that Scherzer. He lost like a straight up great nickname. It's like, oh, is Scherzer benching tonight? Speaking not of Max Scherzer, I was thinking of who would I not want to see open a restaurant? Mm-hmm. And I think it has to absolutely be Chris Sale.
Too many accidents. It's an OSHA violation right there because it's just going to be a hazard.
I've been watching The Bear, the streaming series, and it's very good about a chef de cuisine that has to go back to his family restaurant and start cooking Italian beef in very kind of a low budget, tight quarters sort of thing. And I could just picture Chris Sale in a high leverage restaurant situation where everything's like falling to pieces. And instead of being a team player and saying, hey, you know what, guys, we got this. We're only an hour left on service. We're fine. I sort of would picture Chris Sale would just go in and tip every dish rack over, smash every plate on the floor, and then kick somebody on the way out. I will not be joining Chris Sale for dinner anytime soon.
I mean, I think he has a lot of time for dinner right now, though.
With his bike accidents and whatnot.
Bike accidents, broken finger. He's a glass man.
Well, when you keep punching walls, I think that ultimately might be what shuts you down for a while.
Although he broke his pinky from getting hit with a comebacker by Aaron Hicks, who is another glass man. So that's the irony in that.
What do they call that? Power on power?
Power on power or something there, yeah.
I think Jackie and I are going to get something to eat pretty soon here.
I'm hungry. I am hungry.
I don't know what I'm going to eat. I don't feel like shaved corn. I guess maybe juice. I guess I could have some juice.
Have some juice. Some tomato juice. I'm going to see if I can wrestle up a shrimp cocktail. There's something you can just throw together from your kitchen.
The fans are heading home. The grounds crew is on the field, and we will see you next time at the ballpark. That's how